Grover Beach City Council.
Is this on? The Grover Beach City Council of Monday, March 11th is now called to order.
First.
Excuse me. First. I'm ready to vote.
Vote early, vote often.
Yeah. Yeah. We will now have the invocation by Reverend Sawada, please. Everyone stand.
Let us bow our heads in meditation. O thou of infinite light and infinite life, may your infinite blessing be bestowed upon the member of the Grover Beach City Council this day and always as they make important, far-reaching deliberation in bringing about fatherlands or human dignities, freedoms or individual conscience and justice for all men everywhere. Continue to guide us and give us the insight, strength, and courage our part so that we may better serve our city and nation. Our life is filled with warmth in sharing with others. It is a simple truth to learn, but a difficult practice to fully realize. In personal life, it means to act by placing ourselves in the position of another. And in the community life, it means to give service with joy and gratitude for betterment of all. The practice of making others happy is based upon the clear understanding of life, which is oneness. In deep gratitude, let us realization this oneness of all life, the heart of which is compassion. Namo Amitabha. Thank you.
Thank you. The Reverend Sawada is from the San Luis Obispo Buddhist Temple. We thank you. Now we're going to have the flag salute by Michaela Erickson. She is 11 years old and a sixth grade student at Grover Beach Elementary School. She loves math, she loves science, and also because she learns about erosion. She recently worked on a project where she made a video about glaciers. She really enjoys this project. She used to live in Idaho, where it snowed a lot, and she was cold and had to put up many layers of clothing. She loves living in Grover Beach, next to the ocean. She can now wear shorts all the time and tank tops. She is interested in all school projects, especially math and science. She enjoys all sports and especially swimming. Okay, Michaela, presentation. And some candy so you can see Dr. Arnoldson afterwards. Okay? Thank you. Roll call, please.
Here.
Here. Here.
Here.
Here. Closed session announcement. There's none at this time. Now, ceremonial calendar. A proclamation recognizing John Silva as a Ken Telly Award recipient. John, you can come on up. And while he's coming up, I would like to say that you might think it's a little odd that we give somebody that has received the Ken Telly Award, but this gentleman has worked here in Grover Beach for years and also has done many, many service projects with the Boy Scouts that he has trained and worked with, and that's part of the Five Cities. This is great, a good honor for me to give this to you, John. This is a proclamation proclaiming John Silva, the recipient of the Ken Telly Award, whereas John Silva has been a long life resident of South County, whereas John Silva is a scoutmaster of Boy Scout Troop 26, and his outstanding leadership style has led 40% of its members of the Boy Scout Troop 26 to attain the Eagle Scout level. And whereas John Silva has selfishly volunteered his time to take his troop to the Boy Scout Jamboree in Washington, D.C., and to other scout training and camp out opportunities, and whereas the Knights of Columbus sponsored Boy Scout Troop 26, at St. Patrick's Church in Arroyo Grande, and whereas through John Silva's leadership, Boy Scout Troop 26 has provided demonstrations at Arroyo Grande Harvest Festival with a camp out on Nelson Street Green. And whereas Boy Scouts of America has honored John Silva with a Silver Beaver Award, and whereas John Silva has received the Kintelli Award for Youth in recognition of his contributions to positive character development of young people in the South County, and whereas John Silva was honored at the Arroyo Grande Chamber of Commerce January 28th at the South County Regional Center. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council hereby publicly commends John Silva for his outstanding leadership in the South County, which in turn positively affects the lives of the children in our community. So, John, with that, I give you this. Thank you.
Just thank you very much for recognizing me here today. Like you say, I do live just about two blocks away from Grover Beach, and I have worked here at Marshall Spoo Chapel for the last 17, almost 18 years. So I do have a lot of ties to Grover Beach, and I just appreciate this very, very much. And Scouting is a wonderful organization for youth and for young men.
Whereas Carol Roberts and her husband Richard have been residents of Grover Beach for the past 15 years and celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary on February 27th, 2004. And whereas Carol Roberts and her husband Richard have four children, seven grandsons and one granddaughter and one great-granddaughter. Before I go on, I must say, if you want to see the Van Trapp family from Grover, they have it. These kids sing and do everything. It's awesome. Okay, whereas Carol Roberts is a founding board member and secretary of the Central Coast Exploration Station, as well as the Grover Beach Community Library. Whereas Carol Roberts is a previously Grand Marshal of the Grover Beach Holiday Parade and previous past president and current member of the Embroidery Guild of America Bishop Peak Chapter. Whereas Carol Roberts volunteered at the San Luis Obispo County Health Department Grover Beach Branch from 1993 through 1999. Whereas Carol Roberts is a member of the Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce and co-chaired Adopt a Beach program with the Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce. And whereas Carol Roberts was instrumental in organizing the Grover Beach Table Tennis Tournament. Whereas Carol Roberts was named by the Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce as a 2003 Citizen of the Year for her service on numerous local boards and committees, as well as her dedicated volunteering within the community. And whereas Carol Roberts somehow finds time in her busy schedule to stay active in book selling and fundraising, now for there be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council hereby publicly commends Carol Roberts for outstanding contributions to our community. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all I can say, except that I feel that recognition of the gentleman here and myself is recognition of the value of the projects we're involved in. And so I really am very thankful that the city understands how valuable these things are for young people and for everyone in our community. And a pitch for the library, come on down and see what we're doing, bring books, get involved, and Grover Beach is going to have a library again. We're going to have it. And thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Now moving on to public communications, any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on any items not on this agenda. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to get up and speak? Please state your name and address for the record, please.
Good evening. My name is Jerry Ryu. I'm the executive director of the San Luis Obispo County Housing Trust Fund. And I'm here to announce that the Housing Trust Fund celebrated its first birthday on Friday month. So we're in a position now where we are gearing up to start making loans for affordable housing projects throughout San Luis Obispo County. We look forward to working with your community to help address your housing needs as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. You said March 25th, where and what time?
It's at our offices, 4111 South Broad, or Broad Street, in San Luis Obispo. It's just south of Tank Farm, and we will send you each a personal invitation.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Moving on to the consent agenda. I will pull item 4, please.
I'll move that if there's no other items to be pulled for separate consideration or discussion, I'll move that we approve items 2 and 3.
I'll second that.
On the consent agenda.
On a motion by Councilmember Arnoldson, seconded by Councilmember Ekbom. Voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, item 4. Is Mr. Elder here? Seeing none, then we'll move on. And if he shows up. Okay.
We'll I would move we approve item number 4 on the consent agenda, a request for a letter of support to support San Luis Harbor District.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. On a motion by Councilmember Arnoldson, on second by Councilmember Lieberman. Voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to regular business, item 5, authorize the fire chief to utilize the services of a consultant to develop a multiple hazard response plan for the city.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Doug Hamp, the interim fire chief for the city of Grover Beach. And I wanted to give a little explanation about what this really means instead of just requesting authorization to do funding. The current city emergency response plans are out of compliance with FEMA regulations, FEMA being the Federal Emergency Management Association, their agency. And the purpose of the Grover Beach multi-hazard plan, which is what we're referring to, is to prescribe the city's policies and concepts for responding to emergencies, which could affect the health, safety, environment, and property of the public within the city limits. The plan incorporates pre-emergency planning, preparedness, mobilization, and emergency procedures necessary for an emergency response at the city level. From the city level, we can go to the county level, to region level, and to state, and so on. These regulations comply with each one of those levels of response. Our particular that I started 10 years ago as a single individual, and it took me 10 years. And when I left, the last thing I said was, complete the emergency plan. And what he did was he took the easy way out and hired somebody to do it. It's a very complex process, and it qualifies you for cost recovery. Right now, we're out of compliance. However, by enactment of this document, should we have a major emergency tonight, a major disaster, we would qualify simply because we've taken the steps to do this. So should you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer those.
Is there any questions of our chief?
No one else. No.
I had one. Did a consultant come to you to talk about we need this plan, or did you
no,
go
during,
to some consultant?
During the audit of the department, right. I started searching for the emergency plan. And when I found it, I noticed it is out of compliance.
Another example of why we're glad you're here. So,
okay. Mayor Pro Tem Scholz.
Yeah, I would echo what Councilmember Ekbom said. Doug, could you maybe go into a little bit about once the plan is adopted, it talks about annual exercise. What would that entail?
It does. The initial implementation of the plan, the I'll call him the consultant would come in and actually hold two training sessions for the entire city staff. My recommendation is, and requirement should be, that we hold one exercise a year. And a good way to do that is to take a look at our community threat potentials, so we know which they are, in particular using the safety element of the general plan, and hold a tabletop exercise each year, pick a different exercise so that we're familiar with all of those. The nice thing about the plan, it's very consistent. Each incident would be managed in the very same way using the incident command system in SIMS, which is the standard emergency management system, which is another government-required program, but it works well. It just correlates right in with our multi-hazard plan. So I'd recommend we do one plan a year. It takes a little bit of time, but the staff loves it, and when you have something happen, everything falls into place.
Now, as part of that team, will you have someone who's there to do, let's say, accounting of what it's going to cost if, let's say, the simulated disaster that you're doing the exercise on? So will there be a financial component to it?
It has a command and planning component. It has a finance component. It has logistical. It has safety. And so it's broken into a five-point increment, and each one of those is laid out in a document. For example, there's going to be three large volumes of documents. The first two are state and federal mandated documents saying, here's what we've done. The way that the consultant puts the program together is that there'll be boxes assigned to each organization, and this is your emergency operations center. And you have an advantage over many communities. Having your emergency operations center in the same building that we work in, you don't all have to stay in here and try to shout over the top of each other, because that's normally what happens. Your finance people can return to their finance office and do their assigned tasks. Logistics can go back to public works or whatever. Planning can either stay in here or go back to their office and then come back at a specified time and give updates on what's going on the information you receive from your field commanders, whatever type of incident it is. Everybody learns special task code, and in this particular community, it's made up of different folks other than the council. But he carries the information to the policymakers, who then decide to what level are we going to go, and they fulfill that role, and then it works its way down to all the different positions of people that are in here.
Great,
very effective program.
Thank you, Doug.
Okay, Councilmember Arnoldson.
Doug, how often will this be updated? Is this you were saying we'd go through this procedure once a year? Is that the whole thing will be updated once a year on an annual basis? Then is that what you're saying?
The disaster management program, the disaster plan, has to be assigned to a department or individual to maintain responsibility for keeping it updated, and the updates and changes would come to them that are dictated by federal or state government, and those are made in cooperation with local county agencies. So what can happen is, over a period of time, is as we go on, if there's nobody assigned, then basically the plan becomes ineffective.
And that's kind of what's happened at this point.
I'm not sure how.
I'm just saying that we really probably haven't had anybody that's been assigned to a plan, so the plan's just kind of been set on the shelf.
And there's a chance that those of us, you know, that are assigned to these positions inherit these things, and then obviously they, if they're not a major function of our assignment, then they're overlooked.
Okay.
Okay. Councilmember Lieberman.
Thank you. I don't know if everyone saw the article that was in the Tribune that talked about Chief Johnson from Paso Robles, and he's preparing an after-action report for what happened in that city. And I think a plan like this, and more importantly, the drills, because the plans are only as good as the drills that really hammer this information into the participants. He said, after the earthquake, for example, I believe it's the recreation manager, was named the logistics officer, and commended that individual for the performance far exceeding their training. I think this is a natural progression where if our recreation manager is handed the title of logistics, it's not going to be a complete shock. And that basic training and guidelines and the checklist of what needs to be done is invaluable. So I think plans like this are wonderful, and the annual drills are a great thing. So. Glad we're doing this.
For information and not to belabor this, you'll hear, if you listen to fire department radios, many often you'll hear the engine company show up and assume command. That's the very first step in developing the incident command system. That command system can then go to a higher-ranking officer, and then if it gets bad enough, you open up the emergency operations center, create your director of emergency services and your staff, and build your program from there. So that's why we use it on a daily basis.
Hi, Dave.
What was that?
I have one question. Since we have three schools in our area, do we include them in part of this? Because if something, a big disaster should happen.
Certainly.
You know, we have a lot of parents and families that are going to be rushing to the schools to try to get their children and stuff. So.
And that's a real integral part of your training. We used to have Disaster Awareness Day in Paso Robles, and we did it once a year based on each threat potential. And part of that was to teach people how to be independent, because do not plan on getting help maybe for 3 days, especially in North County. We used to say, you know, we're somewhat remote and we lose the grade and so on, then it'll be a long time before we get help. The automatic aid that we enjoy from our neighbors today, we may not get. They're going to have their own problems. So we need to be independent, coordinated with the school district. So there's a whole lot of things to this that need to be addressed.
One more question.
Yeah. Steve, Councilmember Lieberman.
Steve Works. Doug, from my time as a volunteer firefighter, there's always a question I had as to how effective we were going to be should there be a downwind release of a hazardous material, and that a lot of seniors in our community are by themselves, and several of them, or a lot of them, don't have adequate transportation. How do we identify where those folks are? And the book from when I was a volunteer said we had the blue recreation van. That was going to be the pickup vehicle. How do we identify who those folks are?
The county and through the health department does send out a list every year, confidential list to the fire department that tells where people that would need transportation live.
Okay.
And those are special needs. The other thing that we use, and we've used it on numerous occasions, and we did at that care home I spoke of earlier, is we supplied them with enough supplies. They supplied themselves with enough supplies to go for 72 hours. And they duct taped all their windows, shut off their air handling system to the outside, and they sheltered in place, which is probably one of the safer things to do. And we've done that before on incidents. Instead of trying to move people into harm's way, we just keep them there.
Mm-hmm. I think there's where it's important, again, that those little things that the fire department gives the senior citizens to put on the refrigerator, to show all their medications and everything, if they should need some help, all that information is right there, and the firefighters know what to do.
That's correct.
So. Okay, if there's no other questions, I'm going to open it up to the public. Is there anyone in the public that has any questions of this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Mayor Pro Tem Schultz.
Sorry, guys, I jumped ahead of the line. In light of the San Simeon earthquake and the need to be prepared for disasters, I've been involved in several of these drills as a staff person in the city of San Luis Obispo, and it is invaluable, and I think it's definitely something that we want to do in this city. The fact that it's a FEMA requirement and it allows us to have cost recovery, I think it's a nice thing. It's a great thing for us to be doing, and with that, I'd like to make a motion that we adopt resolution for the 19th Amendment to the Annual Appropriation Resolution Number 0364 to provide funds for the development of a multi-hazard response plan.
Is there a second?
Yes. Second, please.
Okay. Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Schultz, second by Councilperson Lieberman. This is a roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Councilmember Lieberman. Yes.
Councilmember
Allison.
Yes.
Councilmember
Etzel.
Yes. Motion passes. Moving on to item 6. Parks and Recreation Revenue Enhancement Proposal.
That's all right.
Mm-hmm.
with the assistance of our staff, our city manager, our administrative services director, our Blue Ribbon Committee members, the firm of Maximus, and the professionals in the parks and recreation field, we will be proposing exciting new policies and procedures for years to come. We'll be presenting information on our project background, how we identified our costs, our revenues, our subsidy levels, and recommended new revenues and policy changes. The Parks and Recreation Department has been dramatically increasing our services and improving our facilities over the last few years. As part of our rebuilding process, our department implemented the Recreation Needs Assessment in the year 2001. And there were three key results from that survey. We had nearly 700 people respond of the survey, and out of all of the utility bills that went out, 700 response rates. So we were happy with that result. The first key result was that 72% of the respondents stated that they had not participated in a city program, recreation program. 61% stated that the reason was that they were unaware of a program existing. And 71% stated that they were willing to pay as much, if not more, for a recreation program if it was available. Based on these results, our department requested additional staffing at the last fiscal year budget process, and we were able to receive a recreational coordinator position. And with the addition of a full-time person on, the department as a whole has been able to complete numerous projects that were in the pipeline and placing the foundation for future programs also. The revenue enhancement project began with the formation of the Blue Ribbon Committee, and this consisted of people in our programs that were impacted by our fees. We're very happy to be able to offer a cross-section of members that included a Tiny Tots parent, a skate park parent, an adult sports participant, a nonprofit facility renter, user, and also a regular renter in one of our facilities. On a parallel basis, while we were forming the committee, staff was also doing research and networking with other professional agencies in the state. The Blue Ribbon Committee also provided information and input that was valuable to our department regarding improving certain policies and procedures, which in the long run will increase our efficiency and lower our staff costs for providing a process or a service. Our work with Maximus included the staff time allocation method, and you all have reviewed that methodology last city council meeting. This is what we used to implement for our results. We also implemented the public policy pricing matrix, and this is a common tool used across the recreation industry as well. As Mr. Pearl stated at the last city council meeting, the pricing policy matrix involves taking into consideration many factors, including the political, economical, philosophical, and practical reasoning. As a city, we need to decide what is best for Grover Beach. Mr. Pearl also made five key points in his presentation regarding fees. Fees should be proportionate to costs. Fees should be equitable and fair. There should not be profit gained by fees. Fees should be based on what...
for each of our programs that we offer. And the first step to do that was to allocate all the costs associated with our department to each program. So we took all the direct costs and all the indirect costs and distributed those over user fee activities and non-user fee activities. You see the results of this analysis here. We identified about $500,000 in cost with the Parks and Recreation Department. This included salaries and wages, supplies and services, citywide overhead, as well as under the other costs, that included the pay that we pay out to contract instructors and a few other items. You can see that youth classes and Tiny Tots are where we spend the majority of our budget. The next step to identifying the subsidy level was to identify revenues. So we used either historical data where available. So, for example, in fiscal year 2003, we know we had 235 building rentals that brought in roughly $15,000 in revenue. For some programs, we hadn't been tracking that data. So what we did is we took current data for the first half of fiscal year 2004 and extrapolated that out. So as of 6 months through fiscal year 2004, Tiny Tots was on pace to have 1,400 registrations at an average fee of $70 for $98,000 in revenue. So these revenue figures reflect either a historical number that we feel is a good reflection for the future or current data extrapolated out for the entire year. Now that we have revenue and the expenses associated with each program, we can identify the cost recovery level. This is our department-wide number. It's 35% and falls within the range identified by Maximus as the norm for Parks and Recreation departments. That range was 20 to 45%. And then the subsidy level is therefore 65%. We applied the same analysis to each of our programs, and as what you see on this slide is the current subsidy level for each of our user fee programs that we're recommending a change in subsidy level for. You can see we subsidize programs anywhere from 20 to 84%. As the Blue Ribbon Committee and staff set out to evaluate each program, we used, as Kathy said, the fee setting policy matrix to guide our decision-making process. And this took into account basically, we applied a matching principle. The person or group that benefits from a service should be where we recover the cost of that service from. So for certain items like building rentals, where the individual solely benefits from having the building rental available to them, that cost should be recovered from the individual through fees. For an item that benefits the community at large, such as a special event like the holiday tree lighting ceremony, we should recover the cost of that activity from the community. Subsidize it through taxes. Most of the things the Parks and Rec Department does, we sort of had to find a balance because it wasn't clear whether it wasn't a completely individual benefit, wasn't a completely community benefit. There's some balance that had to be found, and that's where the Blue Ribbon Committee came in, as well as talking with other cities and other organizations that we work with. A few technical difficulties.
Go, Web, go.
There we go. So what you see now is, again, our user fee programs that we're recommending a change in subsidy. In the green, you see the table or tree program, as well as the sports equipment rental program and the South County Skate Park. The dedication program allows the city to make improvements to parks in other areas without actually having to purchase the item. We donate the staff time, basically, and it's that we get to make these improvements at a much lower cost. Therefore, we're not recommending any fee increase. Sports equipment rentals account for less than one-half of 1% of the budget. Basically, these are items we've purchased for special events or classes that we're just trying to use as much as possible, and there's not really any revenue potential here. And the city's currently negotiating a new contract with the YMCA for the staffing of the skate park, and that'll be presented as a separate agenda item at a later time. And we aren't recommending any increase in fee at this time. I'm going to turn it back over to Kathy now, and she'll take you through the recommended policy changes.
Sorry. Thank you, Nick. The additional areas of recommended revenue enhancement, one of the other areas is non-resident fees. And this is an accepted method used across the recreation field. And many cities in our area are using it as well. And the basic philosophy of the non-resident fee is that our Grover Beach residents are paying tax dollars and they're providing support to our department. We're providing services to anyone who wants to participate in our programs. However, a Grover Beach resident could possibly be subsidizing programs where, you know, in our statistics, 68% of our participants are fee-paying participants are non-residents. So this is a good opportunity to increase revenue. And you can see in the pie chart of our other cities versus the Grover Beach residents. This could possibly bring us in over $2,600 in additional revenue. Another area to enhance revenue is charging fees for nonprofits. Nonprofits provide us a great service to our community, and some subsidy level is appropriate. Currently, our Grover Beach nonprofit users are using all of the facilities for free of use, and the city is absorbing all of the direct and indirect costs to provide that service for a facility renter, a nonprofit renter, and other cities.
Can you name some of those people and what facilities they use?
Let's see. We do have that in our last attachment on the back, very last page.
Page, attachment 12.
Attachment 12. If you look at EOC, Economic Opportunity Commission, the Department of Social Service are essentially a majority of our nonprofit users. We have tracked probably up to 40 hours a month that those groups can be in our facilities, scheduling meetings, whether that be meetings for staffing or meetings for parenting workshops. We don't really know exactly what they're using it for, but we do know that they are using it for social services. And
which facility do they use, Ramona?
They use both facilities.
Okay. Ramona and
Community Center.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Basically, what we're proposing for the nonprofits be charged that rate, and then non-Grover Beach nonprofits be charged 50% of the regular rate. Another area of revenue enhancement are amenity fees, and this is an area where, again, just based on the research, we're recommending adding these as an option to charge a fee, and this would mostly go toward the groups who are interested for special events, the wedding receptions, where every weekend some type of amenity is used. And the city is providing these amenities free of charge. We're not recouping any maintenance or, repair costs or even replacement costs. So we felt that based on the information and what private agencies are charging to rent this, these are very fair and equitable fees to charge a user group. And if they don't want to use it, they're welcome to bring their own equipment on a special event, and that'll just lessen the wear and tear on our equipment. Lastly, something that won't directly enhance our revenues is facility and cleaning maintenance. And this is a specific policy that we discussed regarding alcohol-related events and the fact that those are high-impact events with having large groups of people, high wear and tear on the facility. And this policy would ensure that the facility is cleaned after every event and that the people would be paying that cost. And this will also help us recover ongoing maintenance costs to do the maintenance of resurfacing the floors instead of every year, every other year, or every 3 years. So in summary, the total impact that these recommendations could make are close to $79,400. This will bring our department in line with competitive rates and services, and this will allow us to lower our taxpayer subsidy level and recover the cost for the users who are using the facilities and the programs. And the City Council has alternatives, and we are recommending that the City Council, one, approve all of the recommended changes to the Parks and Recreation Department's fee structure, direct staff to prepare an amendment to the master fee schedule, and convene a public hearing to amend the master fee schedule. Thank you.
Is there any questions of staff?
I have one.
Councilmember Lieberman.
Hey, Kathy, I'd like to commend you and your staff for a really concise staff report. The PowerPoint was just value add as far as I'm concerned. I think it was really easy to read and to kind of see the logic behind what the Blue Ribbon Committee considered. I would like you to, if you could, explain something that was touched upon in the staff report, in that while we're proposing some fee increases, there will be an opportunity for scholarships through the CDBG funds. If you could explain that, that'd be great.
Yes, that's a good point to make. The department does have community development block grant funds available for this year that we've currently just started implementing for youth scholarships to close the gap on the youth that may feel like they're not part of the program. We have scholarship money available for low-income families to apply. So
$23 per hour. What is there... what is their job? When they're there, are they to supervise? Are they there to clean? Are they there to do what?
The building attendant's purpose is to basically be a rover. They're roving the facility. They're picking up trash. They're wiping up liquids. They're checking on the restroom cleanliness. They are maintaining the city's assets inside the building.
Okay.
And that is a quoted rate, a direct cost from the janitorial service that the city won't reap any benefits from that money. It's just us adopting a policy to implement that. In addition to alcohol-related events, user groups are required to have security guards, and security guards basically protect the city's assets outside the building, and they're the ones who are roaming outside and doing crowd control and making sure alcohol is not leaving the building.
And then in addition to those two people supervising, you're proposing a $80 to $130 per event cleaning charge.
Yes.
And now, so when these committee groups rent this building and pay all these fees, at the end of the night, do they just walk away, or are they still required to clean the building before they leave?
They are required to do basic minimum cleaning, essentially pick up and take all of their stuff that they want to take with them. Most of them do that already. If they bring in any utensils, any food, decorations, most of them pick up most of their stuff and go. They don't wipe tables and they don't wipe floors, and that's what the cleaning service is for. And what's important is that we base these policies on our history. Our history with the building is teaching us how to deal with these situations with alcohol-related events. And this is our best scenario that we can come up with on the fact that we do not have on-site staff. The building attendant is essentially working as our on-site staff person. So this is a real clean option to just say $23 an hour, one building attendant. You know, you're there from the time that the guests arrive to the time that the guests leave, so they're not being charged the entire time that when they go in and start decorating. It's just the core hours, the critical hours that damage can occur.
Okay. That just seems like a one person overkill. I can see we're requiring supervision for security, and then you have a building attendant, and then you have another service coming to clean it. It seems like a real overkill for a little community for us. But
it is.
That was my opinion.
It is also treated on a case-by-case basis in terms of if we're having an 80th anniversary party where there's a champagne toast, we will use our best judgment on the time to have a building attendant start. You know, we work with the customer in most situations. We are not trying to turn people away. We definitely need the revenue, and we want to encourage that use. This is our most extreme situation in large alcohol-related groups.
David, I think you can remember times when you or I were using the plunger in the bathrooms.
But that was my point. A lot of the parties that we've had, we've all, at the end of the evening, so I think that if there was a way for us to make more of an effort or perhaps spend more money somehow or other trying to build the participation to all these events, they will pay for themselves. They might have a zero subsidy on a lot of things that normally are subsidized 40 or 50% because of the small turnout. And that's my other concern about if we're going to go in this battle now of starting to charge a non-resident fee, as some of the other cities do, I don't know if that will distract part of our core of people that come to our city. I don't know if that's enough of a charge to for someone from Pismo or Rio Grande to say, no, I'm not going to Grover because they charge me an extra 10%, is that what it was?
It's $10.
Yeah.
So I paid it.
Well, okay. I'm not a big fan of that non-resident fee, and I understand the other cities are doing it, and so I suppose we'll jump on the bandwagon. But I thought that in this small community, we should all be using each other's recreation departments and enjoy the facilities. But that was it, I guess.
Okay. Councilmember Arnoldson.
Thank you. There, I have a couple of questions. One of them that I'd like to ask to start with is on the recommended amenity fees. I don't see that we have deposits for some of those things, and I would assume that that would be a very good idea, too. Someone's going to rent a stereo system for $10. I think that's, first of all, a ridiculous fee. I think you should be higher than that. When you can rent a podium for $10 and a stereo system for $10, it doesn't make sense to me. But I think that there should be some kind of a deposit for those things, too, and I don't know if those are worked into this. I don't see them if they are, because if someone ruins a stereo system, you know, it costs a lot more. And it's really difficult. It costs more to get it to replace it than $10. And once it's ruined, it's hard to get the money back from someone unless there's a deposit that's placed up forward. And I kind of wanted to jump in with a couple of things Dave said. I think that he's entirely correct when you start looking at the way that these fees are allocated. When you say there's $500,000 that's allocated to this department, and you start taking to each recreation program and taking it as one recreation program against that $511,000, it really doesn't make sense. It's like Dave says, if you have 15 programs, then the allocation for those 15 programs is a lot less than if you have five. So I agree with what he's saying. The more programs we have, the less we're going to have to subsidize them. And so I'm not really sure that in some of those program areas that I agree with the way that the fee is allocated. I can see the fee being allocated for a building or for a park, but when it comes to a program, it's hard to allocate that in that means, as far as I'm concerned. But then on the other realm, I guess I do disagree with him when it comes to the cost of having someone on board when you rent a facility and you're doing some type of a program there. For someone to be there that knows where the major fire and a major destructive event that happened at the community center, that thing would probably be held together by termites. It was only because of that event that we have a beautiful new community center at this point. If you look at it, it's beautiful. The other center that we have, the Ramona Center, is basically, I think, appalling in some instances because of what's happened over there, because we haven't had people on board that are there to say, we saw you spill that oil in the middle of that floor, and you're responsible to clean that up. A week later, someone walks in and goes, oh, there's a spill. I wonder how that happened. The floors over there look horrible, and the only way we can keep responsible renters, make them responsible, is to have someone on board when they're there. I think that's part of what that $23 does. And that Ramona Center has gone downhill quite a bit. And by having fees that recoup the destruction and the ongoing damage that just happens whenever you have 150 people in a building or whatever there is at a wedding reception, that's the only way you can keep these buildings up. So people have to pay to use those facilities. So I guess I had not so many questions as more of a rambling on, but thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes.
Thank you, Mayor. Kathy and Nick, excellent presentation. I'm very impressed. I read the staff report, and as Councilman Lieberman said, I was totally tracking with where the report was going. I wanted to commend the individuals who participated on this Blue Ribbon Committee and those who had expressed interest but didn't participate. I think we've gotten a group who are impacted by the fees, and it looks like everyone pulled their weight and came up with what seems to be reasonable fees that are proportionate to the use of the facilities. And so I just wanted to give everyone a shout out, excuse my slang, but on that. I have a few more statements that I'm going to make, but I'm going to wait until after we go to the public and get their input. But I do have two questions that kind of the first one that came to mind was, under youth recreation classes, you're recommending 35% subsidy. Was there any discussion about reducing that to 25? Because as I look at the end result of the others on the table, the summary table on page 7, it seems like there was quite a bit of an increase, and that one didn't increase as much. So I was wondering if the Blue Ribbon Committee discussed the 35% recommended subsidy.
The Blue Ribbon Committee reviewed other city subsidy levels. However, this is an average fee, so depending on basically the elasticity of demand of the actual youth class, we can raise and lower the subsidy level based on that fee. And some youth classes are more popular than other youth classes. So they didn't get technically into detail of each class, but we did talk about youth recreation classes and the benefit that they provide to a community.
Great. And the second question that I had, and I should have done a little more research up front and I've forgotten, but in the 04 budget, and maybe the city manager can help out, what was the targeted enhancement for Park and Recs?
85,000. Enrichment program, I'm sorry. We, as a part of an aside, we as a slang, we say they're our preschool, but technically they are recreation enhancement. They are an additional recreation class that we are providing for our community. They are unique in that they are very popular, they're very successful, quality teachers, quality program, quality facility. There's a high demand in a waiting list. The instructors are been in, you know, in our program, I think we've said over 30 plus years together. The Tiny Tots program is also unique in that it also serves a social service to our community in that, yes, it is recreation enhancement, but a lot of people need that service for their under, you know, 5-year-old children. So we're meeting a community need for a social service as well. We felt that breaking that out and to be a full cost recovery program on its own will meet the demand. The elasticity is there. The community will respond. Again, there's another program. 68% of those participants are non-residents. So that is something where we feel that we are possibly pushing out Grover Beach low-income families that could be participating in that program if they had the opportunity. If you look at the competition or the other cities, really, there isn't competition because Aurora Grande is the only one that offers preschool, and they're in the same situation in terms of demand and waiting lists. And this is something that we feel extremely comfortable that will recover its cost completely. And in addition to that, in our non-resident increases of the percentage over the flat fee, instructors will benefit from that as well, so that as prices go up in our classes, maybe over the years, they will also increase the percentage of that revenue as well, as the city too.
I guess one of the things I was going to ask you too is why you're not recommending, since we have 36% of the people that take or the kids that take our Tiny Tots are from Grover City, Grover Beach, why aren't we recommending that at least to keep that an avenue where the people that are in this community, that live in this community, have an avenue for low-cost, I mean, the people that don't have a lot of money have that avenue for low-cost child recreation or actually child care, whatever you want to call it. Why aren't we recommending that since we have such a low waiting list and since there are so many people from out of our community that do this program, why are we recommending that they at least raise the fees on the non-residential people there?
I'm sorry. Well, we can't raise fees above what it costs to recover the program.
And that's what I'm saying. Why not recover that program for non-residents people over the people that live here? Because they're using our facility, the Grover Beach facility, which people live here have somewhat an entitlement to because they pay taxes, as opposed to somebody from Napomo or Rio Grande or Oceano or Pismo Beach. I think those people that are taking this using our facility and taking a class or whatever in our facility should have to pay a little bit more. And like you said, there are a lot of designated people in this community that are low-income people that could really use that program.
Yes.
That theoretically, if we add that to the CDBG range of alternatives that we can use for scholarships, those scholarships can only be used by Grover Beach residents. So we could use CDBG scholarships to underwrite or the cost for folks who are low income or qualify for that program, and we can charge full cost recovery fees for the program, and those folks that are non-residents would be at full cost recovery, which is the maximum we can charge, and those folks that are Grover Beach who can afford it would be paying full cost recovery, and those folks in Grover Beach who couldn't afford it would be able to use the scholarship from CDBG.
Okay, that's one alternative, I guess. This, and by the way, this program has been going for 25 years or plus or something. It's probably the best program that the Recreation Department has, and bar none. And they've kept our Recreation Department, gave us a name for many years because they're such a quality organization. And I just hate to see them take the hit. So, thanks, Kathy.
Thank you. Any more questions?
I had one to kind of follow up on Ron's. Your revenue is $98,000 in Tiny Tots, and your expenses are $122,000. So you're not a break-even proposal until you do your revenue enhancements.
Right.
So rather than make an entire revenue enhancement, why not charge the non-resident fee as part of your revenue enhancements rather than...
That is an option that the council can decide.
Okay, because you're acting like the CBDG money is going to be here forever, and you're always going to get a subsidy for scholarships.
That was basically my same question.
Yeah, I know. Okay. And you're saying that this is an ongoing program for CDBG, and no, it's not. We might not get that funding, or we might not allocate it for that use. I think it's actually a poor use of it. So. Maybe someday somebody else will think so also.
Well, so. In response, I guess what the Parks and Rec staff is saying is that this is a program that has a waiting list. Rio Grande has a waiting list. And if we were to charge full cost recovery rates, they feel that we would still have the same level of participation that we have now, and we will be recovering more of the cost. There will be less taxpayer subsidy of a portion of the recreation program. And that was part of, you know, their charge was to go out and identify targets of opportunity to close the subsidy gap. And this is one of those ones that they feel very strongly, and I guess the Blue Ribbon Committee also felt was a target of opportunity that made some sense and that would have the elasticity of demand to not be hurt by the increase.
I think we're all in support of what you're doing here. I mean, the Blue Ribbon Committee is coming with just exactly what we need, but we could still give a number of them. So it may be as half a dozen people that are growing some things in this one R1 lot in our city, and it just doesn't make sense to me at all. Just a real waste of a city asset.
Don't we have two, Kathy?
No, we only have one currently, and that is on the Brighton Street. The one on Saratoga was actually a private owner that loaned the lot to the city for about 20 years, and that lot did sell.
We might find another one that's empty and looks ugly. Okay, Council Member Lieberman.
I just wanted to, again, I'm really curious to hear any public feedback, but Ron and Dave have gone down a path that kind of appeals to me as far as the Tiny Tots program. I mean, obviously, we all know how successful it is and about the waiting list, but I kind of feel a responsibility to the citizens of Grover Beach. If there's a waiting list, to discount pricing a little bit, still do full cost recovery, but maybe drop the rate for a Grover Beach resident and have an out-of-town resident pay that gap. Don't say no to me.
Absolutely. <Yeah. coughs> Whatever you...
Thank you.
The Article 13 of the state constitution limits the costs that we can recover through user fees to costs reasonably borne. What that means is the full allocated cost is the maximum that we can charge any individual that's using it. So we can't say the folks from Arroyo Grande or outside of Grover Beach can pay 120%, and the folks in Grover Beach only have to pay 80%, and it all comes out in the wash. We can't do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Before we open it up to the public, I just want to say thank you, Kathy. That was great. And your sidekick there. I do have a question.
Well-dressed sidekick.
Yeah. on Group 1A, where it says no fee charged, are you including the Men's Club and the Grover Beach Rotary Club? Because I know the Men's Club does tremendous work locally, and the Grover Beach Club will be starting. Will they be included in this group, or is this just a... Okay. And I think I feel the same about that one lot that's empty. Okay. We're going to open it up to the public. We want to hear what you have to say. We'll give you 3 minutes. So anybody who would like to come up, please step forward. We want to hear what you have. Yeah.
When saying you want the public, hi, my name is Sue Hartman. I live at 275 North 9th Street in Grover Beach. A couple of things. I do want you to know that not only did I think Kathy's report was the best she's ever done. I told her she should start her PhD because this could be part of her thesis, the way she did this. I was really proud of her. But I think, too, it is important to realize that, first of all, there is no park and rec department in the whole world that is profit-making or breaks even. I mean, that's not our point, is to offer recreation for the city as a whole. Yes, not totally subsidized, obviously. But I think, too, even when Councilmember Ekbom was talking about, very difficult for me to find any fault with that department. And I certainly can be critical, as you well know, but I am. I'm just really proud of them. And it makes me really want to be active on the commission, you know, and in the city. Thank you.
Not to short change the rest of the people who work in our rec department. We have Nora and a couple other girls. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, the sidekick. Okay. Would anyone else like to get up and speak on this item? Please come forward. State your name.
Honorable Mayor and City Council members, my name is Tony Brown. I reside at 387 South 14th Street. Now, maybe I missed a point because I'm legally blind, but on the $511,000 that you refer to, how much of that money does the city recover, if any, or is that all subsidized? I have some other things I want to bring up later on, but this is on the table right now.
So. Yeah.
It's in the staff report. This is. Sir, the revenue from the Parks and Recreation Department was $180,849. That's 35% of the $511,000 costs. So 35% cost recovery, $180,000.
The rest of it is subsidized by the city.
Correct.
Okay, and then when Dave Ekbom, a friend of mine, when he was mayor, he was going to be the year of the streets. We only had a little over $400,000 that year for total street repair. And we only did one street in the whole darn town. That was Highland Avenue. So I think we're off balance. We let our streets go to pot and spend it on recreation. I'm a firm believer in recreation, but I'm also a firm believer in streets. We drove here tonight from our place. We came on South 14th Street. We came down can't think of the name of this... Long Branch. We came down Long Branch all the way to 8th Street. Like to lost the bottom out of our car. The street is in such bad shape. Long Branch. I'll talk in a little bit about South 14th Street, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Okay.
Did you want to answer that, Mr.
Brown?
contribution.
Mayor, members of the council, I'd just like to point out that one of the reasons why council has directed us to look at the user fee study and to enhance revenues is to free up the general taxpayers' money in the general fund to be able to use it for those kinds of activities like street maintenance and police and fire kinds of activities that are basic public services that are funded with taxes.
Quite clear, and we were enlightened by staff as to why we couldn't do that, because it still is cheaper to rent the Ramona Garden Center or the City Recreation Building than it is to rent a similar building in a private facility. So when we look at those items that we have cost recovery on, in reality, one of the ways we subsidize the members of our community is charging them a not-for-profit cost. Not a not-for-profit organization, but because Grover Beach cannot charge a profit on services, we're really more than competitive with a lot of facilities. If you go to rent a meeting room in a private facility, whether it be a restaurant, a hotel, without food service or professional services and wait staff at that facility, you will find that we are charging somewhere in the neighborhood of 20% to 25% what it costs you to rent a similar building. Because one of the things the Blue Ribbon Committee brought up was the very fact that we would have liked to subsidize rec programs with a wedding reception or a business program that went on at one of the centers, and we really are forbidden by law to do that. If the law ever changes, I would say it would be a great way to subsidize our rec program. One of the things that Councilmember Arnoldson spoke about was the fact that youth recreation classes maybe needed to be subsidized more. And I think one of the things that really is critical is when the CDBG money is used, those are the very kinds of programs that we're going to see that money used for. The subsidy may have to be greater at some point when, like Mr. Ekbom spoke about, we get to a point where there is not any more CDBG program, and then we're looking at other forms of subsidy. The staff did a great job at looking at what we could do the most effective way. I think what we're going to see happen is with the $65,000+ we're looking at here this year, we're going to be taking baby steps to use some of that money to enhance programs. Because we have Nick on staff now, it's going to enable us to do other programs. So next year, you may see that figure of revenue enhancement higher because there's more programs, more people using facilities, a more attractive facility to use, and those things will add up. One of the things I want to finish with is Councilmember Arnoldson mentioned the issue of how we protect assets like the stereo or the keyboard and things like that. Almost all uses of the facilities incur a deposit. And so there's already a deposit built into the system that allows the city to make sure that deposit isn't given back if any part of the facilities are not taken care of. So there may not be a specific deposit for the stereo or for the podium or for chairs, but there is a way to make sure that stuff is protected. I think staff did a great job. The committee was really in concurrence that the way to make sure everybody paid their share would be better for the city and both the residents of the community and other communities that used our facilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Monroe. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak on this item? Yes, sir.
Madam Mayor, City Council members, my name is Chuck Ashen. I reside at 458 Seabright in our city. I said all this. There's a few questions I want to mention here or bring up in regard to this enhancement proposal there. I think the money that we spent on the park systems are really a small bit in overall view. Granted, our city, though, is hurting for cash in comparison to a lot of other much larger cities in that. But it's a small pittance that we pay in that. And the enhancement here involved is basically what we're talking about, $69,000 increase there. However, one of the things that troubles me is that I see that 68% of our facilities or our programs there is being used by outsiders and non-resident people. And far as I'm concerned, the park system within our parks is a community park or a citizen park of this town. Granted, we have to, in order to make some of our programs successful, we go to the outside to allow other people to use it. But I would have no trouble in for instance, charging a non-resident fee there. I have trouble somewhat charging some of the fees we do to our taxpayers that reside in the city because it's like they're paying twice. They're already paying for the building of the facilities, they're paying for the salaries of the facility, and they're already paying within your budget for the maintenance of the facilities. So if anybody's going to get a break, I think the residents ought to get a break. Now, if the trend is going towards a regional type deal, it seems to me a few years ago that the council was going to look into maybe joining services with some of the other surrounding communities there and to seek maybe to work together where they can alleviate some of the financial pressures. Maybe that's the trend, if that's why it's going so two-thirds of our use of our park system is from out-of-town residents. I don't know. Another question I'd like to address is within the skate park deal. I know they addressed it, but they chose not to give any recommendations. For the past year or so, I think, and it's much deserving to your credit there, that you saw that a fence got put up to protect our facility over there. You actually went ahead and hired a YMCA there to monitor the facility there, and I think that was a great thing there, and I wholeheartedly endorse that. We have brought up in the past year or so a sign program, and I think you're all aware of it there. That has a potential of eliminating the deficit that's running over there, which is roughly about 19,000 or about, I guess, a little under 50% of our costs in that. We've increased our programs over there. We're looking at making some capital improvements in that. But I think what we need to open up our signage program to this, and Councilman Lieberman is well aware of it, to the outside citizens or the families in that. I see no problem where a family donates the funds for a sign, which is renewable each year on a lease basis there, and it provides a steady income coming in there, and they say that the Lieberman family or the Scholes family welcomes you to our skate park there. I see no problem with that. We seem to get bogged down somewhere in the staff process there. They want to limit it to a commercial entities only there.
Are you back? Done.
Okay, yeah, I'll wind it up. And in the past year, I think the history is we've tried now for a year to lease it out to commercial enterprises alone, and we appreciate any cooperation from them, but we'll only lease two signs. And I think we can eliminate that deficit in that program entirely there if we open it up to families. Thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else that'd like to speak on this item? And
get more stuff put in, more technical things, more challenging pieces and stuff like that. And I'd just like to, thank you guys for having the park and stuff and letting me have my contest and all that. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the public that would like to speak on this item? CNN will bring it back to council. Councilmember Arnoldson.
Why don't you let somebody else go? I'm still trying to gather my.
Okay. Councilmember Lieberman.
Well, being that the state constitution prohibits me from doing what I want to do, and I'm not a good loser. I like what's presented here. I do think it was great the city manager reinforced that increasing the subsidies to full cost recovery or higher subsidy level will do exactly what we've been asking for, and that's freeing up general fund resources to do street rehabilitation and other projects that correspond to the goals identified by this council and the community. So any time after we finish our discussion, I'm ready to make a motion.
Okay. Councilmember Ekbaum.
I agree with Steve. I'm comfortable with all of it here now, I guess. My only point was hopefully with Nick on board, we can get more participants for each of the programs that we provide. We don't have to provide more programs. We have to provide popular programs that generate a lot more participation, a lot more entries or people that will join together and pay their fees, and then our subsidies will go way down already. So that's the answer to this whole thing, is to become more successful. Anyway, yeah, I'm comfortable with this. The Blue Ribbon Committee, I think, is a great step that we had to take.
He just put a lot on your shoulders, Nick. Mayor Pro Tem Scholz.
Thank you. Now that I've got the comments from the gentleman to my far left, I'm going to tailor the comments I'm going to make. I believe, as I said earlier, that the staff and Blue Ribbon Committee have done a great job in identifying revenue enhancement. I think the involvement is probably unprecedented in this community. I believe the recommended fees and subsidies are in line with other communities and will achieve the balance that we're looking for. As I said, the Blue Ribbon Committee, they're comfortable with the recommended fees, and I have to trust that. I think during these economic times, these tough economic times, that we don't want to be subsidizing other agencies in other cities. And so I wholeheartedly can support the recommendation they've got and the non-resident fees. I've participated in adult leagues in the cities of San Luis Obispo, Santa Maria, and San Luis County. And let me tell you, if you are interested in participating, you will pay the fee and gladly pay the fee for the opportunity to recreate, for the opportunity to have camaraderie with individuals who share the same passions and desires that you have. And so I have no problem going down that line so we can have the best programs and go through that process. So I think we are going to get there where we're trying to go. With respect to the cleaning fees, I don't have a problem with on-site building attendance. I think it's definitely necessary, as Councilman Arnoldson had talked about earlier. And I'm going on, and I'm saying a lot more than these gentlemen because I was trying to wait until it came back. So I had a few on my list. And long story short, I would support the recommendation from the staff and the Blue Ribbon Committee. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Arnoldson.
Well, I guess with all that's been said, I still have the tiny tots stuck in my craw. They've been pulling their weight for 20 years or so. Now we're going to kind of jump them up to zero subsidization. They've been subsidized 20% historically. That's higher than any other program. And I'd like to see us subsidize them 5% and raise the non-resident fees if that's possible. But we can't do that. We can't. Why can't we do it? How can we do it to other programs, but we can't do it to Tiny Tots? We can charge our non-residence fee for softball, but we can't for Tiny Tots? Is that what you're telling me?
The proposal that's before you is not full cost recovery for adult sports, for example.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If we went 5% recovery for Tiny Tots, we could charge for a non-resident fee and make up for everything but 5%.
The if you were to charge non-residents 100% of the cost and residents 95% of the cost, you could do that. You just wouldn't raise as much revenue, and therefore there would still be a subsidy. And you know, that's a policy decision that the council can make.
Well, and I guess that's what I'd say. That's what I'm saying. I think what I would feel more comfortable with. This particular program has been the backbone of our recreation department, and I think they've held the recreation department together in thick and thin. And I kind of, there's no one from that department here. There's none of none of the gals are here, but I have a feeling that they would be opposed to a raise in their fees.
Ron, can I jump in real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just to share, just having a child of preschool age, and knowing that there's waiting lists in both public agencies as well as many daycare centers, I don't think the rate that is being proposed here is anywhere near market rate. I pay substantially more to put my daughter in another preschool program. So just from a parent's perspective, I just want to share with you that I don't think it's an unreasonable amount to charge a parent.
And that's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying that I think that one particular that has been a program that has been a real service to our community, and we've subsidized it just 20% for all this time, and I don't feel bad about that. I think that's been a great service to the community, and I think that's what I'm saying. As I said, that I guess I'm saying I think that is for a Grover Beach residents, I think it should be a service, and if we were to make it tougher for people from the other areas, I mean, from Arroyo or Pismo or something like that to get into. Maybe it'd be easier for people in Grover. I don't know what the waiting list is, shows, if there's more people from Grover or whatever, but I guess that's what.
Is to some extent a shadow of programs available in the private sector. In other words, we're not offering a Tiny Tots program because you can't get it anywhere else. There's private preschools, there's private facilities, there's private recreation programs that offer it. And we are still offering it at considerably below market value. So there's two things involved here. Number one, if we subsidize it more, we're offering it at that much lower than market value. And the demand says we don't have to offer it that inexpensively to serve the community because we're serving everybody we can and then some if we could. And one of the things in a free enterprise country that we have to look at is whether or not we're offering something at taxpayer expenses and depriving a private business that offers the same service the ability to make an income because we're lowballing the price. So if the only Tiny Tot program in Grover Beach or the South County were the one in Grover Beach that the city's operating, then we'd say, yeah, maybe we need to subsidize it because no one else is offering it. But there's an awful lot of programs like it out there, and they are all considerably more expensive. Councilmember Lieberman, I have a child that was in the Tiny Tots program at one point, and also in the child that same child was in a private program. They're both wonderful programs. There's not a thing wrong with the Tiny Tots program, but we're still offering it at probably about 25 to 30% less than it's being offered in the private sector. So if we're already doing that, let's not dilute our pot of money to have recreation programs while we're then competing unfairly, if you will, with the private sector.
Thank you. Thanks, sir. Okay. I just want to say that I congratulate the Blue Ribbon Committee. I think they did a great job. This just goes to show you Blue Ribbon Committees do work. And thank you, City Manager, for bringing that idea up. Also, I want to mention that there's a lot of volunteers out there who bring in dirt and help fix the fields that we must not forget, that still pay fees and so forth when their children participate in our recreation programs. Stuff. Okay.
I would just like to add, a Blue Ribbon Committee is a great idea, but it falls down if it's not executed properly, and I think that Kathy and her folks have done a wonderful job. With that, I think there's been a lot of discussion. I want to move this forward. So I'm going to recommend that we adopt a resolution amending the annual – I'm sorry. Where am I? Here we are. I'm going to recommend that we approve the recommended change to the Park and Recreation Department fee structure, that we direct staff to prepare an amendment to the master fee schedule, and we schedule a public hearing to amend the master fee schedule. No changes.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Scholes, seconded by Councilmember Lieberman. Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes?
Yes.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Councilmember Arlington?
Yes.
Councilmember Ekbal?
Yes.
Mayor Santos?
Yes.
Good job. Commission approval for an architectural approval for a two-unit plan unit development, which is a small lot subdivision located at 243 North 3rd Street in Grover Beach. This project, which I said is a two-unit plan unit development, was approved by the commission at their meeting on January 13th of this year. And in order for the commission to approve architectural approvals, they need to make specific findings that the project is consistent with various issues. I've provided the five specific findings that are provided in the zoning ordinance under the section on architectural approval. Okay. However, with this project, the Planning Commission wasn't able to make the required findings due to the fact that this project had a roof deck proposed on the second story. The specific findings that were determined they couldn't make were related to finding number 2 and 3, which state that The proposed design is not detrimental to the orderly and harmonious development of the city. And three, that the development does not impair the desirability or investment or occupation in the neighborhood. The elimination of, so in order to approve the project, because the commission thought that it was a good project in other respects, except for the roof deck, they added a condition of approval to the resolution of adoption, which required elimination of the roof deck. And it's the elimination of the roof deck that the Planning Commission is appealing. Actually, let me back up. It was elimination of the roof deck and also the exterior staircase. Roof decks and potential issue impacts to to privacy have been an issue growing with the Planning Commission and the City Council, an issue of concern. And the Commission and Council have addressed this issue in several different ways in different times, depending on circumstances. The Planning Commission has worked with applicants where they recommended that they redesign the project and bring it back with a change of elevation so that it's less visible. A roof deck would be less visible. In other cases, these projects have been appealed to the City Council on prior occasions, and the City Council has either required the removal of the roof deck or, in another instance, an applicant was willing to redesign the roof deck so that it was set back from the edges of the building, recessed within the rooftop so that it would protect the privacy of adjacent neighbors. And this might be another alternative that the council might want to consider. Staff is looking into the larger issue of establishing a policy because at this time there is no specific criteria or policy that applies to roof decks, and it's reviewed on a case-by-case basis. But we will be looking into establishing an ordinance, developing an ordinance for the City Council to establish on this matter. Staff's provided several alternatives on how to consider this project. If the Council chooses alternatives 2 through 4, which are to approve the project with the roof deck or to modify the plans, to modify the design of it, or some other option, we could bring back a resolution reflecting these changes at the next City Council meeting on as a consent agenda item.
Council Member Arnoldson? Mayor Pro Tem Schultz?
No questions.
Well, okay. This is a public hearing, so we will now open it up to the public.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kurt Berger, and I'm the applicant. I live in Arroyo Grande. I'm here to appeal this Planning Commission decision. Our plan satisfied the Grover Beach Planning Department, as was evidenced by the recommendation of our project to the Planning Commission. And at the Planning Commission hearing, no neighbors protested our proposed building. We didn't ask the City of Grover Beach to vary from any of its established rules or ordinances, and we're not asking that now. There are 5 units with rooftop decks within 100 feet of our development. There's a 3-story unit right now under construction at 13th and Ramona, and at our Planning Commission meeting, there was a 3-story mixed-use residence 50 feet from a residential area. Now, I'm saying that because a 3-story living area is at least as intrusive as a 2-story deck. I feel like we're being arbitrarily singled out regarding the use of this deck or our proposed 2-story deck. Our total cost to date is $6,500 in plans and fees, and we're not going to build this without a deck. Came up with this design because it lends itself to a deck. It's flat roofed, and if we're shot down on the rooftop deck, we'll be starting from scratch. And it's our position that it's unfair for the Grover Beach Planning Commission to deny our building without notice to the public and its own planning department. For us to get this far and then show up at a Planning Commission meeting and be told that this isn't acceptable, it should ring to you as being basically unfair. Can I answer any questions?
Is there any questions?
Mr. Berger, could you identify the other roof decks that you had alluded to in your letter?
There are 5 of them across the street on North 3rd Street, and they're all over the city, as a matter of fact. The architect that we employed designed ours
the same as he designed the one that's accepted. I don't know if it's on 10th Street, but it's about that. And everybody on staff, I'm sure, knows that there are 5 rooftop decks on 3rd Street.
Well, let's ask staff that question.
Sure.
Staff, are you aware of any rooftop decks in this neighborhood?
There might be some. I did drive through the neighborhood, but I wasn't sure which ones you were referring to, to be quite frank.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
There are other roof decks in the city. Yes.
Okay.
Is there any other questions of him?
I'm sure that Mr. Sabula's firm is aware of the controversy of roof decks. It's been an ongoing thing in our city. Are you unaware that there was any controversy at all with a third-story roof deck?
Well, yes, I was unaware of that.
You were not?
I said I was unaware.
Unaware.
Unaware. Okay. But if you don't make that an ascertainable standard, I don't know how anybody would be aware. How are you going to know that you can't do it without there being some sort of a standard that says we are not going to approve second-story decks?
Same as you have view shed issues. It's on a case-by-case basis.
Well.
So, anyway.
Okay.
Okay. Councilmember Lieberman, so that I can see for myself. And they do, in fact, have roof decks. They are small roof decks, and they are recessed roof decks. And and at the Planning Commission, when this was heard, the applicant was asked whether or not he would consider recessing roof decks, and we were told no. So that is why the commission did reject it, because there seemed to be absolutely no movability. As far as the fairness issue is concerned, just because we've done things in the past, when we find that there are unintended consequences of the things we do, we very often change that. As a society, as a commission, as a council, everyone does. So I think that when the privacy issue became something that became more prevalent with the increasing popularity of the roof decks, it becomes a fairness issue as to whether or not, where does the fairness lie? I personally would never want to live next to a house that had a roof deck where people could peer over the side into my windows. And I can't, and it's my civic responsibility, I feel, as a commissioner to protect the neighborhood and the community from what I consider needless intrusion, and that's how I see the situation. But he's absolutely right. There are 5 roof decks. However, if you look at them, they're almost indiscernible because they're so far recessed and they are so small. Thank you. Thank you.
I couldn't see them.
Yeah, I looked for them.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this item? There's another person before you, sir.
Sure.
Yeah, my name is Charles Sabula. I'm the architect for this project. We have our office here in Rover at 171 North 13th Street. And one comment I like to make is that we were perfectly willing to recess the roof deck from the edges of the building because we can't make it very large anyway just because of code restrictions on occupancy due to the fact that you're up at the third level and have only one stair, then that reduces the amount of actual deck area that you're allowed by code. And we wouldn't be able to put it out to the edges anyway. And as far as not being obtrusive or not being noticeable, I don't think you can tell by looking at our drawings if there's a roof deck up there or not, except for the stair. But it would not be out to the edges. It would have to be recessed back farther away from the edge. And I didn't realize that we said no, we wouldn't do that. I thought we said yes, we would be willing to do that at the meeting. That's all I have to say.
How far back were you talking about recessing it?
Well, generally five feet or so would be a reasonable amount.
Okay, thank you. Is anyone else that has any questions of this item?
Can I speak again? Yeah, when we were at the Planning Commission meeting, I didn't understand that there was an offer for us to take the roof deck back some amount of footage to make it acceptable to the City Council or the Planning Commission. That's the first thing, and we'll live with that. The other thing is that I don't really see that this is the Planning Commission's
Thank you, Mayor. I think Councilmember Ackbaum hit the nail right on the head, and I think others, council members, have alluded to it. We are dealing with the issue of roof decks, and we've had a few projects that have come to us. One was the Moore residence, and I know everyone doesn't want to keep revisiting that issue. But there was, in fact, some concern, and in that particular case, the roof deck and the exterior stairs, the applicant compromised and was allowed to build his home without a roof deck. There was another one that came forward on Saratoga, in which the Planning Commission, I thought, trying to respond to the direction of this council, denied that roof deck, and it was appealed to the council. The roof deck was ultimately approved with modifications that it was recessed. I did not support that. And I still am at the point in which, until we have an adopted policy or ordinance dealing with roof decks, I think it is our purview to deal with privacy. It is the purview of the Planning Commission to deal with architectural review and the impacts on the neighborhood and surrounding neighbors. So I'm not swayed by the argument. And at this point, I'm inclined to support the Planning Commission.
Thank you, sir. Councilmember Lieberman.
Thank you. I understand, Mr. Berger, the emotion and the investment you have tied up in this property. And I mean, I have to tell you, obviously, before visiting your property and before seeing you this evening, all I had was your letter. And frankly, I was offended by the tone of it. In essence, what you're asking for is this council to review your project and deny it in whole or make modifications to it. Comparing this project to a mixed-use live-work project on Farrell Road, I don't believe is relevant. Questioning the ability of our Planning Commission, we're all citizens that have taken a role in our community to do what we believe is best in our community, and this is a community in transition. That's why we've seen roof deck issues come and go, and we're working with staff, and staff has taken the initiative to not only address view shed, but to give us some ordinances on roof decks, and your timing, unfortunately, is right in that work period. We just had our first workshop last week. Now that I've gotten that off my chest, one more thing. The people that are appointed to serve our Planning Commission are appointed by this body sitting before you, so I would keep that in mind as well. Sitting on the council, as we've taken on these two projects, one of them was in a neighborhood that's in major transition. It was a large home. There were modifications made by this council, including the removal of a roof deck. Sitting on this council with the project on Newport, I believe it's Newport, there was major dissent from the neighborhood. The homeowner decided to accommodate request of this council, take about 10 feet off the second story of his home, have setbacks into his roof deck, and that project was approved. I have no problem with the architectural look of your project. I think it's a beautiful project. I am taken back by the tone of your letter, but if I take the emotion out of this, if we can approve this with the setbacks at 5 feet, I'm okay with this project. Thank you.
Councilmember Arnoldson.
I don't have a problem with the tone of your letter. I'd be ticked off myself. And I think you're right. I think that at this point in our development on that northwest corridor, to how to change the project. But if there's no one that's opposing it, why should we, as members, start as members of the community that don't live there, start to try and tell you and the community, the people that live down there, what they should be opposed to? I just don't understand. There's no opposition from the community, but we're gonna protect them anyway. So I think that. There was an opposition. Why are we taking this case and saying it's the same as the one that was on Ocean View or the one that was on Saratoga? Those are the two different projects that we talked about before. And in both those projects, we had people that lived in the community that were very upset about a building being that close to them and having two stories and looking down their backyard. And we just had a little meeting a couple of weeks ago about trying to get an overview of how to develop this community. We're talking about five stories on Ramona. Talk about people that should be upset. They should have been coming out of the woodwork talking about a building that's going to be five stories across the street from residential. And so I think Mr. Berger's within his rights. I think that, you know, I mean, I think that I would let this project go as is, but if it comes down to a situation where we need to make a modification, I'd be happy to the five-foot setback.
Thank you. Councilmember Eckbaum.
Mr. Berger, I know you're mad, and I don't quite understand why. You're trying to shoot yourself in your foot. You should relax a little bit here. I happen to like this kind of architecture, and it lends itself to a roof deck. I thought that we had the solution when we did the recessed roof decks, the recessed 5 foot back, and I wasn't sure how you could do it with this type of building when the architect says it's going to be kind of required anyway because of the size limitations. I think it's fine. I also have been opposed to exterior stairs, but the fact that it's very attractive and it's from the second story on up, it doesn't look so massive as the other one did. So I'd have no problems about allowing a small sized recessed roof deck on this project.
Okay. I have to agree. I like the looks of it very much so. And I think with your architect saying he could do the 5 foot setback, that would be fine with me. So, okay.
I wanted to thank Arlene Versoff for coming here this evening. I think her testimony is weighing heavily with me. I appreciate the fact that she's here and she could relay to us the discussion of what occurred at the Planning Commission meeting. So that's important for me to take into consideration.
Thank you. Is there any other questions? Statements? Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we adopt staff recommendation 3. Approve the project with modification of the floor plans to require the roof deck area be recessed toward the center of the roof by 5 feet on all sides.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Moving on with council committee reports.
Are you going to keep your plan?
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes.
Oh. I gave back the
day. You've got it.
Nothing to report on EVC. I did go to the Tang meeting. There was discussion. Looks like we should be expecting a noise ordinance probably in the next month or two. They've worked diligently to get an ordinance before this council. And then at some time in the future, I think they're going to be recommending a noise element update to address some of the issues with respect to ambient noise and one-time import pulse noise. There was also some discussion about replacing individual mailboxes with gang or cluster boxes. And so there's going to be some additional studies going on trying to establish price, the legal responsibility of installation, and also a survey of residents to see if there is interest, because if there's a way to eliminate or reduce the number of mailboxes in a block by putting in a gang box or a cluster box, then maybe we could beautify the area and try and get some buy-in on that. With respect to SCAT, we just received the short-range transit plan, and it looked like over the last year, due to some modifications or adjustments in some of the routes, that actually ridership was, in fact, up for the last year. And so there was good news on that front. And on SLOCOG, the staff, Steve or Rhonda Carley and his staff did a wonderful job in dealing with the regional transportation plan and found a way to be creative and fund a majority of the projects, but they did defer others to the year 2008, 2009. And so what was anticipated to be a day-long meeting from 8:30 to 3:30 ended about 10:30. So,
wow.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
And they had asked us before time to give them our lunch order. So I had to go buy lunch on my own.
Oh.
Anyway, we also set the work program for the following year, and I have copies of all of that, and I'll circulate it to you.
They talked on regular business about the Easter egg hunt that's going to be in Arroyo Grande, which is April 15th. So mark that down in your calendars. The co-ed adult volleyball league is getting started, and they need more players. Steve?
Yeah, right.
He's kickball, man.
Saving myself.
Yeah. And then staff talked about their Blue Ribbon Committee and their policies and recommendations. They talked about the skateboard park. They need 9 new sets of equipment. And they talked about the skateboard contest, which they happened. They had an update on the Cleaver property. They talked about lighting at Grover Heights tennis court, which will follow. And they talked about updating the policy and procedure manual. And let's see. Oh, they talked about the thing that they were going to have, hangout night and so forth, which is good. And then I think I touched on it a little bit earlier that the Five City Softball League was going to put dirt on 16th Street Park and Grover Elementary Park this last weekend. So I haven't followed up on that and see if they came through with that. And then on the Sanitation District... hard to keep all these things in order. Not too much went on. They are going to keep the emergency pump for another couple of months till after the rainy season is over to protect the plant. We decided that we weren't too sure, and thank goodness, because of this last rain. I have a meeting Wednesday, so we'll see what happened. They wanted to send it back for $6,000 a month. So thank goodness we didn't. And that. I also went to a meeting about the levy. They're going to be coming back with a better assessment of exactly what they want. And this is like a subcommittee from the Sanitation District with a group of people that I went to there. And then tomorrow is going to be very important because they're having in front of the Board of Supervisors about the biosolid land application ordinance, which is going to be in front of the supervisors tomorrow. I wish I had time to go, but I can't because of work schedule. But very important.
That was on there last week, too.
Yeah.
Is this a continuation?
It's a continuation. It's tomorrow.
I watched that last week. I'm trying to remember. Okay.
Yeah. It says... report on the county will take up the proposed interim moratorium ordinance on March 2nd to make additional considered adjustments. So, and that was it. Okay, moving on to...
Can I make a comment? Dave, yes. You remember we were talking about the money that was set aside by APCD or, you know, that was on the agenda last week, too. I watched the supervisors, and they acted like they
had... ...than it has been in a number of years with well over $600,000 appropriated this year, and it is broken into three different phases. Two of those phases have gone out to bid and been awarded by the city council, and the construction is going to start on phase two, and the contractor, Union Asphalt Incorporated, will be doing a construction walkthrough and explaining to the folks in the neighborhood the course of what will happen in construction. And on Tuesday, March 2nd, that's tomorrow, at 3:30 p.m. at the intersection of 5th and Atlantic City Avenue, the street sections for 5th Street from Parkview to Saratoga and 6th Street from Parkview to Atlantic City Boulevard will be reviewed by the contractor. And then a half an hour later at 4 p.m., at the intersection of 1st and Saratoga Avenue, the contractor will be going over the project to pave 1st Street from Atlantic City to Newport. And just want to encourage folks who live in those neighborhoods to attend those and find out what kind of plans are being made to pave their street and what kind of accommodations are going to be made to minimize a negative impact on their lives during the construction. And, of course, council is, as always, is welcome to attend those.
It's nice if you can go because you walk with the people that are going to be doing the work and talk with the people along the street there.
I have a question.
Question?
This is actually not regarding phase two, but phase one. Where are we in that process? When are they going to?
As I recall, that has been awarded, and it's a different contractor. And that, I think, is a combination of South 16th and
Saratoga between 13th and 14th,
right.
And I think Brighton,
right,
a portion of Brighton.
And I don't know. I guess they have, like, 30 days to mobilize and. And I'm not sure where they are. Do you know Jake? Or?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
I know there was an issue on the South 16th with regard to the trees and getting an arborist and all that stuff. So I don't. That may be step number one for them.
Now the arborist was advised to proceed with the removal of the trees.
Okay, because I know I keep driving by these segments of streets and not seeing any evidence of activity, and it just kind of begged the question.
Sure. Yeah, is tomorrow rain or shine?
Doesn't say.
Rain cancels?
No rain tomorrow. Bring your umbrella.
Thank you. Okay, item 9, proposal to schedule a review of the 17 community goals adopted by the City Council for FY04 at either a regular or special City Council meeting.
Mayor, members of City Council, as you recall, Council Member, those kinds of issues, and that would be particularly beneficial to staff if we had that kind of input in the month of March. March is a month that has this particular March has 5 Mondays in it, so we kind of have a bonus Monday. And so one option might be for us to take the 4th or 5th Monday in March and hold a goal-setting workshop number 2. We could also conduct such a workshop as part of a regular council meeting if that's the council's desire. But the most important thing, I think, is to say that if we're going to use this as input in any way in the budget process, it would be most helpful for staff if this were to occur during the month of March. So we're interested in what the council's consensus might be with regard to whether to include it in a regular council meeting, say on the 15th, or to go to the 22nd or 29th.
Do you have an idea what the other items on that agenda would be, how long it would be if we did this in conjunction with the 15th?
On the 15th, we have a number of issues already. We're looking at traffic committee report, an award perhaps of the recreation element. Mayor Pro Tem Scholz was speaking of earlier the potential to reconsider the updated land use element. I think council asked us to put that off for a couple of months. It would be coming back. Proposed agreement with YMCA for the operation of skate park. The building planning Blue Ribbon Committee meeting. There's been a couple of other. We got the hearing on the CDBG, and probably the discussion of the visioning.
Forget that.
I think it's pretty.
What about the 29th?
Maybe too much sun there already.
29th?
It's fine with me. I got a question about how involved you see this discussion going. Do you see a lot of new issues coming up or reports on lengthy staff reports on how where we're at and each of the goals now? Or is it going to be kind of a fast-moving, well, I still like that goal. Let's go on to the next one. You know, it could be is it an hour meeting or is it a four-hour meeting?
When's the last time we ever had a meeting last an hour?
Well, maybe it's an opportunity. Maybe it's an opportunity.
I'm good with that.
Well, Dave was out of town last time. It only lasted an hour, so I don't know.
No, that's true. I think it's an important question. I mean, when you brought this up, Ron, I thought it was we were going to revisit the 17 goals, see where we're at on each of those 17 goals, and then say, given the state of the state, do we kind of push this one off for a while and focus?
Well, can we put it at the end of the agenda, and if it takes longer, then we can continue it over to the 29th, if that's what we want to go.
Or do we
pretty packed.
Yeah, why don't we just book it for the 29th?
We can always cancel.
Oh, is that where you guys are going? Okay.
Yeah.
I can get with that.
29th sounds good. Okay. Consensus.
So just focus in on where we are with the goals, and the council will have an opportunity to say whether we want to put some of them on hold or change the priorities of them or whatever, and potentially one or two other items that would be of interest to look at in the budget process then, I guess. Am I hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
Not to exceed 1 hour, right, Dave?
Well, after this state bond issue fails next week or tomorrow, and there's no money.
I think we're going to be surprised. It's probably going to do pretty well.
Okay. All right, moving on, City Attorney's Agenda. Item 10, request for financial support from the City of Simi Valley for the appeal of an adverse decision in a police case.
Honorable Mayor, Council members, thank you. Attached in your agenda package is a letter from the City Attorney for the City of Simi Valley, addressed to all the city attorneys. It seeks councils of various cities to contribute monetarily, basically, first of all, to the approximately $150,000 that it's going to cost Simi Valley to attempt to have this case heard by the United States Supreme Court. In the alternative, it also asks for council's consideration of cooperation or joining in an amicus brief, which is a mechanism by which entities outside of the litigation support one party or the other. The case involves a search warrant, arrest, and a seizure, which the lower courts found to be unlawful. The city is attempting to appeal it from the Ninth Circuit Court's decision. The Ninth Circuit panel had some found for the plaintiff. There was a request for an en banc hearing, which means the entire court, and that hearing was denied with some very strong dissent of three justices, which gives a lot of hope to the city that this case may be heard by the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, bad cases, bad factual situations end up making bad law, generally speaking. So the concern is that bypassing the particulars of this given case, it may open doors to erosion of the protection offered to the police officers during searches and some of the matters that are attached to the permissible questioning of suspects. I spoke with David Hirsch. He recognizes the budgetary constraints that exist on all entities and all municipalities at this time. And he said that the city at least would hope for a support or an expression of support text. Positions that would affect, may affect all of the cities in California. So if it is a position that is important to champion, if you will, for lack of a better word, it is common for cities to sign on to an amicus brief. You're not making that decision at this point in time. If and when that process comes, we would meet in a closed session and discuss some of the more detailed aspects of joining the litigation, basically, is what you would be doing as an amicus party. Today, we're simply putting some options in front of the council with regard to whether or not there's direction to financially participate or direction to bring it back when the amicus process is initiated.
Thank you.
Councilmember Lieberman.
Nothing.
Councilmember Eklund.
I'd like to hear from the chief if he thought it was an important issue for us to be worried about.
Unfortunately, chief has a conflict of interest in this matter and cannot speak on it.
Well, I did a little math, and if there's 450 cities, $300 a city would pay the entire bill. If it's something that it could certainly affect us in a negative manner, I'd like to see us send $300 and say, attaboy, good luck, guys, keep going, and show a gesture of support and a token amount like that. I don't think is serious, but I don't know how involved this next step is. This amicus brief, or what? I didn't hear the
amicus,
whatever it is. I don't know if that's more involved financially or time involved to join the lawsuit.
The city of Simi Valley hired one of the most prominent United States Supreme Court attorneys in Washington, D.C. He will undoubtedly be writing the briefs and doing that type of work. So the process of signing on to the brief is a very simple process. It is not time-consuming, nor is it costly.
Well, Simi Valley has a lot of bucks. So I imagine they're going to do it whether we join them or not. But I didn't. I just thought maybe a gesture of support might be worth something. So that was all.
I could see that. My other, comment of sorts would be we look at the makeup of our city, and it could very well happen here. In the situation that happened in this particular case.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so I like your idea, David. So could I have a motion?
I don't know if we need a motion, but I'd like to suggest that we send our share, which I believe is just about $300, as one of the 450 cities in California that might be affected by this.
Are you going to alternative two?
Could you spell out a little better what are the benefits to this community if we go down this road?
Well, the benefits to this community would be that participation of the city of Grover Beach and any other municipalities in the amicus brief process, for example, strengthens the position that it's being proposed by the city of Simi Valley, as well as lets the court know, the United States Supreme Court know, that the issue is important to a lot of municipalities. Now, practicality of that is that if this case is accepted, there will be hundreds of cities that will sign their name on to the brief in support of the amicus process. Presence or absence of one entity from that list, I don't think, sways the issue in many directions. Mm-hmm.
And so it's the question that Councilmember Ekbom asked. We don't, you can't quantify how much time that would be, how much time would be, in staff time would be involved in joining that process.
There will be less staff time involved in joining that process than there would be in preparing an amendment to the AAR to bring the item back to it.
So,
okay.
Well,
this is clearly something that the league should be involved in, I would think, if it's going to affect all the cities.
And it is.
And I imagine they will be. And so I can back off my recommendation very easily. I was trying to show a gesture of support, but yeah, if it's going to take more time to give the $300 than the value of the $300, let's not do it.
Yeah, I think that was a noble effort.
Okay.
With that, I'll can I make a motion on this?
Is there any other questions? Seeing none.
There was a motion.
I don't get a second.
Just went through it.
That
you
was fine. I withdraw it, I think.
Okay.
Very easy.
Did you read the alternatives?
No.
Well,
he's going to do something.
I'll just move the staff recommendation.
Okay. And if and when that time comes, we'll come back to you with a formal request for to participate in the amicus brief process.
Okay. Do we need a second on that in roll call or just?
Direction is sufficient. On
okay.
This.
Do you have that?
What?
The direction of staff? Okay. Okay. City Council agenda.
Oh, can I go? You have any?
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes.
Yeah, I'll be brief since we've got about 19 minutes.
City Council agenda.
Are we on the agenda? Okay. I'll wait for communication. I'm sorry. You're right.
Okay. All right. Moving on to public communications. Any member of the public may address this council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes at any time. Have interest with this jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on any items not on the agenda.
Yes, to be more proactive than the law allows us. They showed, the sheriff's department was here with their CD-ROM, and all of the sex registrants that were in Grover Beach were put up on the screen. And
I heard it shocked a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
With people they didn't know were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was a very good meeting. We had advertised it once before and had a very poor turnout. And this last time around, we made a lot of efforts to advertise it and put out the word, and it paid off.
Do you think by this and the way it was advertised that the next Neighborhood Watch meeting will be just as well attended, in a sense?
Megan's Law brought a lot of interest from the community because it deals with their kids and who lives in your neighborhood. I'd like to think the next meeting will be as successful, but I don't think I'm that as optimistic. Next meeting is going to talk about thefts and crime, and we're having a higher crime rate this year than last year, and a lot of it has to do with thefts, so maybe people will be interested. We're having a lot of cars that they're entering at night, unlocked in most cases, and they steal your identification and take that information to forge checks and those kinds of activities. So it's a problem, and we've put on extra people. We're working it. It's a problem that the whole county is facing right now.
And that meeting will be when?
Thank you. Should be tomorrow night at the Ramona Center.
At 7, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, is there anyone else who'd like to speak? Seeing nobody, we'll bring it back to Council Communications. Councilmember Ekbom.
Thank you. Some time ago, I asked for a report on the increases in health benefits for employees over the last two or three years. And it's been maybe December, somewhere in there, I think. And I was told that it was postponed until the mid-year budget review. And I told that there was a detailed report, quite detailed report on it. And I haven't seen it. I was just wondering where it's at.
You're absolutely correct. And we did produce it and had every intention of putting it in the mid-year report. And it didn't get in there. We can get that to you tomorrow.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, Councilmember Lieberman.
Just wanted to say, other than clearing my throat, that as many of you know, it's Celebrate Literacy Month, and if you haven't signed up to go read to some children, I would encourage you to do so. It's a really great feeling, and the kids love it. And tomorrow's Dr. Seuss's 100th birthday.
Are you going Thursday for breakfast?
I'm not sure about Thursday, but I'm reading to two groups of kids tomorrow.
Great, great. Councilmember Arnoldson.
I couldn't do that. They read better than I do, so. I'd be embarrassed.
That's okay.
See Mayor Pro Tem Schultz. See Jane, whatever.
Yes, I will be there Thursday morning at 6 a.m. with Julissa Ortiz and
it is now
children.
Changed to 7.
I have three things I wanted to bring up.
Okay.
The first deals with street trees and a master tree list. I'm sure everyone saw.
Excuse me.
There was an email from, looks like, a lady who has recently moved into the community and expressing a like for planting of trees that beautifies the community and on and on and on. I think I have mentioned on a couple of occasions asking that we give direction that the Grover Beautiful Committee establish an approved list of street trees. I don't know where we are with that, so maybe staff could give us an update on that, but I was pretty certain that there was a council majority who felt that was a good idea. The second thing I wanted to bring up was street improvements, and I have talked with the community development director about on this a little bit, but when we were agonizing over what streets to pick and trying to rank them, there was a discussion of design criteria or criteria that would be used in selecting which streets would be done next so that we could make some policy decision. I know that we're progressing on phases one and two, and three has been put on hold for now, but we are going to hopefully start moving into the next batch, and so hopefully we can come up with some standardized criteria. And then the final communication I wanted to bring up was I see we do have a closed session item on something that has to do, looks like, with land. I don't know if it's land acquisition or not, but we have this, we've established two redevelopment areas. We have these residential set-aside monies, and we have not identified. I know Suzanne has gone through the efforts of identifying underutilized parcels and discussing potential options to potential buyers and developers in the community, but we really haven't made, in my opinion, a concerted effort to try and identify sites in which we could either acquire or find a way to leverage properties so that we can begin to provide workforce housing. I think Councilman Ekbom mentioned this earlier about the community garden. I don't know if I'm going down that road, but I think he makes a valid point. You know, is that a piece of property that there may be a better use? And so I think we need to maybe have some standards and some requirements on property acquisition and maintenance. And so, you know, if everyone is in concurrence, maybe we can give staff some direction to try and develop some of those standards and bring it back so that we can adopt some kind of formal policy on cities' acquisition of property and how we maintain our existing properties. I've got a long list of existing properties under the ownership of this city, but I think we need to have something more formal in place. I think that would certainly help us with redevelopment and getting a project of substance at some point in the future, hopefully near future.
Is that all?
That's all I have.
Thank you.
So, John, are you asking if there's interest in agendizing something like that?
Yeah, I'm asking if there's interest in agendizing an item where we talk about standards or requirements for property acquisition and maintenance of existing properties.
I can get behind that.
I think I'm on board with you. Are you talking about identifying a particular parcel and saying on corner of X and X Street, we should buy that or partner with somebody?
We know what the procedures are, what are the requirements, and how we acquire or look into potential sites for some type of development or how we manage our existing properties. I see the city attorney squirming over there.
You heard tonight from the Housing Trust Fund executive director, and they've asked to be able to come and address the council on the kinds of programs that they're interested in. And a couple of years ago, there was a lot of energy and not a lot of concurrence or congruence with what public agencies were interested in. And I think that is starting to evolve now, where the Housing Trust Fund and the county and city of San Luis Obispo and other cities are starting to come together and to be able to leverage significant sums of money and local investment through financial institutions. So that may be part of a strategy. It sounds to me kind of like what we're fumbling for is a more targeted strategy than we have now. And that might be one of the elements in it. I know when we were doing the housing element update, we had pretty much one session that was devoted to people's self-help housing, giving us some input on the kinds of programs and projects that they've had. And that may be another way to go. And in fact, those are not mutually exclusive. They can work together. So that may be part of a strategy, and perhaps what we're talking about is scheduling some time for a workshop to talk about affordable housing strategy as an outgrowth of the housing element.
Well, maybe we should do this as a two-step process. Let me take the issue of housing off the table, because the last thing I want to do is get into another workshop right now. But the city has a significant number of properties. Other cities I've worked for or have friends in, they have a manual that talks about city-owned properties and how those are managed and how those are disposed of. I don't know if we have anything like that on the books here. So if we don't, we need to formalize that process.
Are you looking for us to basically provide a booklet that shows what the law provides for that type of a process?
That'd be a good place to start. Yeah.
Okay, do you have all your questions answered?
For tonight, yes.
So that's a combination of acquisition and disposition, really, that we're talking about, right?
Okay. Closed session. It's the intention of the City Council to meet in closed session concerning the following items. We'll do that after we go to the Improvement Agency, right?
And that is correct. And if I may, Mayor, point of clarification, I think the Chief mentioned a meeting tomorrow at the Ramona Center.
Yes.
I believe tomorrow is elections, so I'm not sure that's going to take place.
Chief, tomorrow is election night, so are you still having the...
Here.
Chair Santos.
Here. Closed session announcements on February 17th, 2004, after meeting in closed session regarding one conference with labor negotiator, agency negotiator, unrepresented employee, executive director, economic development coordinator. The agency reconvened into public session. No reportable action was taken in closed session, and the agency meeting was then adjourned. On February 24th, 2004, after meeting in closed session regarding one conference with labor negotiator, agency negotiator, unrepresented employee, executive director, economic development coordinator. The agency reconvened in public session. No reportable action was taken in closed session, and the agency meeting was then adjourned. Public communications. There's no one out there that would like to speak. We'll bring it back to the council. Agency. Consent agenda, 1A, minutes of the following meetings.
Move approval.
Second.
On a motion by Chairperson Ekbom, seconded by Chairperson...
You're the chairperson.
Well, whatever.
Boy, you really are delicate.
How about board member?
How about board member? Just cool. Okay, board members. Ekbom, board member Lieberman.
I've been here tonight, and I think General chairperson.
Voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. If you guys wouldn't talk so much. Regular improvement agency business, none at this time. Closed session. It is the intention of the City Council to meet in closed session concerning the following item. One, conference with labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6.
I move adjournment.
Okay. Second. Thank you, Ron.